Welcome to a Juno afternoon on Monday, April 25th, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Carol White and Tyler Emerson will be here to highlight upcoming safe driving classes for teens. Lorraine Jones will be here with a preview of PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus's Saturday concert. We'll get an update on next month's Maritime Festival, and Eric Scholl will be here to talk about Shave Ice. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon, currently 44 degrees here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The president of the Navajo Nation says Navajo farmers are still suffering and the tribe is still waiting on the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for reimbursement. President Russell Begay testified Friday in Phoenix, Arizona, at a U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs field hearing on the Gold King Mine waste spill. Last year's toxic waste spill caused by the EPA devastated tribes in the Four Corners. Begay says the EPA has not fully provided compensation or provided tools to address existing harms. The leader is calling on an independent assessment of the role the EPA played in events leading up to the Gold King mine spill, resources to conduct the tribe's own monitoring, testing, and assessment of water, soil, and crops, and funds dedicated to emergency preparedness for future environmental disasters. U.S. Senator John Barrasso, chair of the Indian Affairs Committee, has vowed to keep pressure on the EPA, saying the committee is not finished and intends to hold future hearings as needed to get answers. An EPA official did provide testimony, as well as the chairman of the Hopi tribe. The South Dakota Governor's Office has announced it will appeal the Bureau of Indian Affairs' decision to place Black Hills land owned by four tribes into federal trust status. Jim Kent examines the state's appeal regarding property purchased in 2012 by the Rosebud, Crow Creek, Standing Rock, and Shakopee Mittewakanton Sioux tribes, after an individual property owner announced plans for a public auction.
Governor Dennis Dugard's office intends to fight the Bureau of Indian Affairs' decision to place Peshla, a land parcel, into federal trust status. The BIA approved the request from the four tribes last month. The 2,000-acre site at the center of the Black Hills is considered sacred by Native Americans. Tribal officials say the BIA decision would have helped the tribes gain sacred site status for the land, and they say it would also have permitted the tribes to decide what to do with the land. But those plans are now on hold, says Kurt Blue Dog, an attorney for the tribes that own Peshla. Questions to the South Dakota Attorney General's office regarding the state's appeal of the land trust approval were answered with documentation from September 2015, offering an overview of the state's position on the trust status request. In the document, state officials questioned the Interior Department's authority to take land into trust for multiple tribal entities. They contend the four tribes that own Peshla are equivalent to an organization. They argue that the Interior Department cannot take land into trust status for an organization. Kurt Blue Dog anticipates the Peshla appeal process could take at least several months. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
An Oklahoma state lawmaker drew the ire of his colleagues last week for comments about Native Americans many felt were disparaging. As KGOU's Brian Hardzinski reports, the remarks came during a debate over updating Oklahoma's alcohol laws.
During a floor speech against changing a portion of Oklahoma's constitution to allow wine and strong beer in grocery and convenience stores, State Representative Todd Russ said Native Americans are, quote, predisposed to alcoholism.
They cannot process that like other people, and yet we want to put that more of that out for them to be just taken advantage of. Please don't do that.
State Representative Dan Kirby, who's a member of the Creek Nation and chairs Oklahoma's House Native American Caucus, said Russ's comments were out of order.
He may not have intentionally done this, but disparaging Native Americans is an uncalled for, inappropriate comment on the House floor.
Russ's Western Oklahoma Senate District includes the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes. For National Native News, I'm Brian Hardzinski.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to A June Afternoon here on Monday, April 25th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Carol White and Tyler Emerson. They are both part of the Taylor White Foundation. Welcome to the show, Carol and Tyler.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. Carol, you are, of course, the mother of Taylor White and the president of the Taylor White Foundation. Tyler, you are on the board. Why don't we start with you, Carol? Tell us a little bit about how the Taylor White Foundation came to be and what your purpose is.
Okay. We formed after Taylor was killed in an accident 2 days after high school. He was out celebrating with his buddies, and they all jumped in a car, and all of them had been drinking, and they crashed just very, very close to their campsite. And he was the only fatality in there. The other kids were certainly injured, but not did not die.
And that was 2009?
It was 2009. Yep. So the kids all gathered together and said, boy, if we could only have believed that this could really happen to us. We see movies about it, that it's happened, but it's your best friend's cousin's boyfriend that it happens to. But we wish we could have really known it happened to us. And so we started trying to get that message out. And that was sort of our first focus. And now we've moved on. And our second focus is really to give kids the skills, the knowledge, and sort of the experience to be safe and to have good thinking skills around driving.
Okay. Among the activities or presentations that you do are these driving classes. Can you tell us a little bit about these, Tyler?
Yeah, the last 3 years, I guess you could say we've been more focused on kind of the prevention end of things. And 3 years ago, we had our initial kind of teen drivers training event, and we thought it was really successful. We had a good turnout, and all the kids and the parents felt like it was a worthwhile endeavor, so we decided to do it again. And so this May 14th and 15th, we're offering a hands-on kind of teen technical drivers training event. It's going to be held at the Eagle Crest parking lot. So basically it's 45 minutes of in-classroom instruction, and then about 3 hours out on the parking lot in some brand new cars, driving around, getting some behind the wheel experience. Kind of, it's not so much fundamental driving training that people might be used to as far as parallel parking, et cetera. It's none of that really. It's kind of focused on more high risk situations that someone might encounter that they would be willing or likely to get in a dangerous accident where somebody would be hurt.
Okay, I see the first one is on Saturday, May 14th, is that right?
That's correct.
And it's a morning session from 8 to noon, and then you have one that afternoon, and then the next day, Sunday, and again, a morning and an afternoon session. Do people use their own vehicles for this?
No, we have been actually so lucky to have Mendenhall Auto donate the cars for the event, so they're all... From what I understand, they're brand new or close to it, and they don't have to use their own cars.
Okay. Let's get back to that in just a minute. Carol, tell us about what else the Taylor White Foundation does.
The thing that people tend to recognize us for is the car display that you might have seen around town. This is actually the car that was involved in the accident. And the display was developed by the Thunder Mountain High School digital art class. They took the documentary and made it shorthand. So they developed storyboards that sort of told about that night from the different perspectives of the people that were involved in it. And it's at the high school. It'll be at the high schools, each of the high schools, right before their prom.
And if people haven't seen this yet, this is the actual vehicle on a trailer.
Right.
And, I mean, it's just that car is, wow,
right.
Really devastated. And then it has these post, like you say, displays that talk about the narrative and everything around
right.
that day, that
right.
night.
Yeah. Our hope is that kids can experience something of the sort of horror of what that was like without actually going through it themselves.
And the documentary, tell us more about that.
So the documentary was Taylor's friend's idea. They wanted to tell about the experience of that night and what it has meant to them, the impact that it's had on their lives. So the name of it is Taylor White Aftermath. And I think that describes sort of what the documentary is about. It's difficult to watch because it is pretty raw. I mean, the kids are very raw and very honest. They were not angels. Talks about them not being angels. And but I think that it is gives good food for thought.
If somebody wanted to see that or learn more about Taylor White Foundation, where's a good place to go?
To taylorwhite.org. The website.
Okay. So give us the details a little bit more about this, Tyler, about the classes and what we should be looking for in the future from the foundation.
Well, we're hoping to have this as a reoccurring event. As far as what kind of details?
Well, it's free. I think that's an important detail.
If you are interested, basically how it works is you go to our website, taylorwhite.org, and there's a link to kind of sign-up page we have. And basically you put down a $100 deposit to reserve your spot for the training, and if you show up and go through it, you can get your $100 back. We're just basically making sure that you show up and don't skip out because it was a pretty expensive training to put on, so I just want to make sure that the resources are utilized and people that want to go show up. And
is there an age range for the class?
We have 15 to 18. The biggest thing is kind of that you've had about 40 hours of behind-the-wheel driving time. Like I said earlier, this isn't like your basic kind of elementary driver's training. We want people to have some experience behind the wheel so they're not trying to figure out where the gas pedal is when they're doing these kind of high-risk or not, high-risk kind of high-speed maneuvers.
I want to speak to that as a mom. That might set off some alarms for me. the instructors are in the car with the kids, and it's very controlled. So it is, if it were to, you're doing sudden stops, so if a deer were to jump out in front of you and you had to stop, you're practicing that. If you're doing a slalom, you're trying to get through cones or whatever on the street, they're actually practicing that. So at the speeds the kids are going, it's not super high. I mean, it's enough so that they had a thrill and they were pretty darn excited when they got done with it. They thought it was fun, but not where they're at risk. The only accident we had last time was in the golf cart with the distorted vision goggles. They couldn't find the brake.
And the distorted goggle vision, what are those there for?
So that's our, there's five different stations, and that particular station is simulating driving under the influence. So, of course, we needed it at very low speeds. So Blaine Hatch from JPD will be there to help with that particular station. And they wear these goggles, and they can actually set the goggles for one beer, two beers, four drinks, whatever, so that it simulates different alcohol levels, and even set at the least, which I think was a two-beer limit, the kids were not doing well with the golf cart. So it made an impact. There's a short video on our website, too, if people kind of want to see what the training was about. We have a video from the last training that they can look at and get a feel for it.
Okay. All of this information and details, the documentary can be found at taylorwhite.org. If somebody can't make one of these classes or maybe they're a different age, what message might either of you have for somebody who's thinking about possibly drinking and driving, or that's a habit that they have. What would you say to them?
Well, I know from personal experience it's not worth the hassle. It can cause a lot of heartache, and it's pretty easy to pick up the phone and call a friend or call a cab, and it might seem like a small expense, but definitely worth it in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'd agree.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Carol White. Tyler Emerson, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I will add that I think the Saturday afternoon session is full. So
okay.
Go on and register and do it now.
Again, at taylorwhite.org. Thanks again, you two.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 25th of April, 2016. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Kooser, born Ames, Iowa, 1939, went to Iowa State to study architecture, dropped out of that, graduated with a license to teach high school English. 1 year of teaching was a disaster. He was accepted to a graduate program, University of Nebraska, kicked out after a year because his grades were bad. So he found a job at an insurance company answering letters. He knew nothing about insurance, but it was a stable job, benefits, and he liked the fact that it ended at 5 o'clock every evening. Every morning he got up at 4:30, made a pot of coffee, wrote poetry in a notebook until 7. Stayed in the insurance business for more than 30 years. In the summer of 1998, Ted Kooser was at the dentist, who noticed a spot in his mouth that turned out to be oral cancer. He went through a rough period, decided to send a daily postcard with a short poem to his friend, the writer Jim Harrison, which eventually became the book Winter Morning Walks, 100 Postcards to Jim Harrison. Ted Kooser, who said, "Frankly, there's nothing wrong with sentiment. Sentimentality is very much in the eye of the beholder, and unless you're writing with sentiment, you're not writing at all. Your writing is cold, and remote. It's better to walk that line." It's the birthday of the novelist Paget Powell, born Gainesville, Florida, 1952, went off to college, thought he might be a writer. A professor of his thought so too, and gave him a copy of Absalom, Absalom by Faulkner. He read it. He read Flannery O'Connor, Truman Capote, Tennessee Williams, moved to Texas, worked as a roofer for 8 years. His first novel, Edisto, came out in 1984, about a 10-year-old boy on the coast of South Carolina. It got great reviews. And his novel, The Interrogative Mood, a novel composed entirely of questions. It's the birthday of the great jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald, born Newport News, Virginia, in 1917, and the man who gave us the character Uncle Wiggily, the old rabbit in a suit and silk top hat, Howard R. Garris, Binghamton, New York, 1873. Here's a poem for today by Ted Kooser, entitled Four Secretaries. All through the day I hear or overhear their clear, light voices calling from desk to desk, young women whose fingers play casually over their documents, setting the incoming checks to one side, the thick computer reports to the other, tapping the correspondence into stacks, while they sing to each other, not intending to sing, nor knowing how beautiful their voices are as they call back and forth, singing their troubled marriage ballads, their daycare, car park, landlord songs. Even their anger with one another is lovely, the color rising in their throats, their white fists clenched in their laps, the quiet between them that follows, and their sadness, how deep and full of love is their sadness when one among them is hurt and they hear her calling and gather about her to cry. Four Secretaries, a poem by Ted Kooser from Weather Central, published by University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by TIAA. Whether it's investing, advice, banking, or retirement, TIAA is committed to helping those who do good do well. Learn more at TIAA.org. And by Lumosity.com, brain training developed by scientists to challenge memory and problem solving through online games. Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall. Seasonal changes may cause muscle strains and sprains. Ron's Apothecary carries a selection of resources for recovery. First aid kits, healing ointments, braces, and more. Ron's Apothecary at the Mendenhall Mall.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 25th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 21 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio are Mary Graham and also Lorraine Jones. They are part of the PFLAG Juno Pride Chorus, and we're going to be talking about Saturday's concert. Welcome to the show, Mary and Lorraine.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Should we start with you, Lorraine, and tell us a little bit about what PFLAG is?
Yeah. PFLAG is an organization of the Parents, Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and they are the main sponsor for the Pride Chorus. The chorus is made up of mothers, daughters, sisters, lovers, and grandmothers, and we share a bond and love of singing, and also support lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender rights and equity, and those kinds of issues. It's a wonderful group of singers. We all have each other's backs. It's great support.
You almost said cooking.
I almost did.
we
like eating,
cooking,
too.
Mary, tell us how many people are in the chorus, give or take, and what's a day in the life like? What's practice like?
we've had up to 40 members of the chorus. I think we're in the 30, maybe to 35 range right now. I don't remember exactly how many are coming to be in the concert on Saturday, and it's a lot of fun. We have a great director, Leslie Wood, and she puts up with a lot because people have said it is kind of like herding cats to have all these women who are full of energy and definitely have opinions to get down to work. But when we get down to work, it works, and we sound really good, and we work with each other. And like LeRae said, we have each other's backs. So besides enjoying the singing, we also enjoy each other's company a lot too. I mean, it's a big social event too, and we have to balance those two things: practice and being social.
And so this Saturday, tell us about what's going on.
The concert is loosely themed on people's passions. And so we have songs that go from gardening and pets and hiking and politics and diversity and dance and around all those things that are people's passions. And but before we start singing, we're going to have a wonderful silent auction, which we're busy raising funds to go to the gala event in Denver this summer. So, and Mary's been in charge of that.
And just to back up for a sec, 6:30, the doors open for the silent auction. This is at Northern Light United Church?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
And what is admission to this event?
Well, there's several sort of groups of tickets. Single adults are $16 from chorus members, or $18 at the door. You can buy a family ticket for $35 and $38 at the door. And seniors and students in the K through 12 are $13 from chorus members and $15 at the door.
And okay. They also can get tickets at the Jack also.
Yes.
Okay.
As as well with chorus members. And the concert itself will start at 7:30 on Saturday night.
Okay. And the proceeds go towards sending a big group of you down to Denver. Tell us about that, Mary.
Right. The first week of Denver, it actually is going to coincide over the 4th of July holiday down there. Gala Choruses, which is the Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses, which our chorus is a member of, that organization has choruses as small as ours or smaller to all, to big choruses throughout the United States. And every 4 years they have a festival. And Denver's an incredible place. We went in 2012. And there will be over 6,000 singers there, and 200 individual concerts will happen. And the reason we expend our energy and try to raise money to go is because it's really energizing to see the whole range of choral options out there throughout the United States. There's probably maybe some international choruses there, and it really energizes our chorus. Being the only gay and lesbian affiliated chorus in Alaska, to be amongst other choruses that are similarly affiliated, it just gives you a lot of energy, and you get to network, and you get to learn new songs, and you get to bring things back that we can share with our Juno audiences as well.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is
educational
a lot of fun.
And
right.
Yeah.
It is a lot of fun.
So people attending this Saturday's concert will support PFLAG in general, but help people go to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say it was July?
Yes. Oh, it starts on July 2nd through July 6th.
Okay. Lorraine, what can we expect on Saturday night?
Well, this fabulous silent auction, for one, which we hope to raise a lot of money. Then we will do two different sets of songs, and the songs are from very serious to very funny. Just before the end of the first set, there'll be two sets, just before the end of the first set, the Pitch Hitters, which is a smaller group, and you may have heard us do Singing Valentines at different times, we'll do a short, I think we have four songs, and then we have a duet from other members of the chorus that they're going to do a duet, and then we'll have a break, and sometime during that break the silent auction will close, and then we'll go back and do a second set.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And an interesting thing about this concert is it's really exciting that there's some women in the chorus who don't normally step up to sing solos have agreed this year to do solos, so you'll hear some different voices. Those who have followed us over the years will hear some different voices stepping forward this year, and that's really exciting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of fun. It's this Saturday starting at 6:30 with the silent auction, and then 7:30 the concert starts at Northern Light United Church. Tickets, you said, are at the Jack?
At the Jack or from any chorus member.
Okay. If somebody wanted to find you online, what's the best way to do that?
JunoPrideChorus.com is our website. We also have a Facebook page, so if you look up Juno Pride Chorus on Facebook, you could also find our Facebook link.
If somebody wanted to get involved with your chorus, your organization, what's the best way to do that?
You can send a message through the website, or if you happen to know one of us, just give us a call.
Right.
Maybe come to your concert on Saturday.
Come to the concert and talk to us, or show up at a Resurrection Lutheran Church at 5:30 on a Tuesday, which is when we rehearse.
Okay.
And you can always get in touch with us there, too.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just come have a wonderful, wonderful evening Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, and I forgot to ask you, too. We have set up here one of your tunes, Harriet Tubman. Can you set this up for us a little bit, please?
Well, that we sang that a few years ago, which it's very interesting because we have a song Saturday that's similar in vein but about different powerful women in the world. So we like to sing songs about powerful women, and that's what this is about.
Lorraine Jones, Mary Graham, thank you for coming on the show today. We'll see you Saturday night.
Okay.
Thank you very,
thank
very
you.
Much.
Wow, that was so fun. It's been wonderful learning to sing this and to sing with everybody. And for me, the creation of energy between us for positive lives, good, you know, good energy for life is what this is all about for me. And the next song is about a woman who was did some incredible contribution to a better life for others. And it's a song about Harriet Tubman, who is, as many of you may know, she was a slave and was she ran away at 15 and found the Underground Railroad to bring her to freedom. And a number of years later, after growing up a little bit, she decided that she was going to be a conductor on the Underground Railroad. And she personally, as the story goes, freed 300 people without losing anybody. And later on, during the Civil War, she worked with the North and saved, freed 800 more people. So there's quite a effort for freedom and a good life. So we dedicate this song to Harriet Tubman, a woman of great moral courage.
Station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice-rink or call 586-0410.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 25th, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, is about, let's see if I can do my math, 26 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by the TDIC Helm steering crew of Midgey Moore of Judo Food Tours, Dana Herndon of the JEDC, and Sean Blumenshine of Ha'ani, and they're here to talk about the Maritime Festival coming up on May 7th. And also a very special dinner the night before on May 6th. Welcome to the show, you three.
Thank you
for having us again.
So what's TDIC again?
Top Dog in Charge.
Is that you, Sean? Are you the Top Dog in Charge?
I'll take that title.
We defer to Sean.
I'm just the bossy one.
All right, so Friday night sounds like a lot of fun, but let's start with Saturday as well. It is the Maritime Festival. What is the Maritime Festival, and how did it come to be?
Oh, well, hey, let me talk about that, because believe it or not, I've been involved with the Maritime Festival since it started. So it's been 7 years, and it was really something that the JEDC created in order to really celebrate Juneau's maritime commerce, culture, and history. And it's something that they kind of saw a need for. You know, it's always good to have community events and to bring the community together, and they kind of decided, like, you know, hey, let's see how the community responds to this. And that very first year was kind of a magical year, because it was a beautiful, beautiful day. It was, like, gorgeous. And we didn't know what to expect. You put a ton of money, ton of time and effort into this, and we had, like, 1,200 people show up or something like that. I don't know. We didn't have an exact count, but it was very widely attended, and it ended up being a really great time. So, like, each year, we've really put a lot of effort into making sure that the festival comes back and that we are able to continue to have it each year, which is really how the dinner came around to be as well, just to continue to fund it and ensure that it gets to come back year after year.
Okay, Dana, how did the JEDC get involved, and why are you guys interested in this?
Well, like Sean said, the JEDC was the one that, I guess, was the genesis of the Maritime Festival.
Absolutely.
And has been kind of leading the way since it started 7 years ago.
Yeah, and what's your inspiration for being part of it? I think it speaks for itself, but what do you guys like about it?
I just love how it's a really, it's a big community event. A lot of people come out that day. There's a lot of different things going on that touch on the various elements that the Maritime Festival wants to reflect, which is the history, culture, and commerce. So, for example, we'll have a couple historical booths. So the Juneau Douglas City Museum will have some information there. Then we'll have, hopefully, Juneau's Hidden History will be there. We'll have La Perouse Albi will be there. And then we have a lot of great children activities. So we'll have rain gutter boat races. We'll have coloring activities. We also, this year, we'll be having the Southeast Alaska Sailing Club. We'll be having their regatta that day. And there's, like, a lot of just different elements that celebrate our connection to the ocean.
Okay. Sounds like fun. And the night before, Midgey, it sounds like you're sort of heading up Friday night. Is that right?
Well, I'm definitely involved. This was a really great opportunity for us to do something unique and different to celebrate the Maritime Festival. And the Port to Starboard Dinner is the fundraising venue that makes the money to put on the Maritime Festival, so that it's never a charge to attend and it's always open and free to the public, because that's what we're looking for. And the Port to Starboard Dinner this year is a true progressive dinner. We actually have three locations. The first location is the Red Dog Saloon. The second one is Twisted Fish. And then we end up at the Tram. The really exciting thing is just how businesses all over Southeast have participated and contributed to it. For example, Port Chilkoot Distilleries up in Haines donated liquor for the tour. So now we have signature cocktails at every single location. So not only do you get great Alaskan seafood that was donated by Taku Smokeries and Alaska Glacier Seafood, but you also get amazing signature cocktails that are part of your ticket purchase, as well as go up on the Tram and have an amazing dinner there as well.
All right, so that's Friday, May 6th, and tell us how that night looks. When does it all begin?
Well, it begins at 6 p.m. at Red Dog, and so the way it will work, when you get there, we'll check you in, you'll get your little passport, and with that, we'll check you, each location will check for your, like a little stamp or a hole punch that you received your cocktail. And then at that location, we're going to have awesome snacks, we're going to have some halibut bites and things like that to go with the cocktail there, which I got to do a tasting of, which was fun, was the bourbon mint julep. And so they're very light and refreshing and delicious. And then from 6 to 7 in 20-minute increments, we'll depart with our cruise directors, and you'll be able to identify them from their awesome little hats. And the cruise directors will be your hosts for the evening, and we'll escort you from the Red Dog down the Seawalk. We're going to share information about the maritime history and mining history of Juneau. And very similar to what I do on my tours, and this is one of the reasons they involved me, was because I already know how to move people. And then we go down to Twisted Fish, where their new restaurant manager and award-winning bartender there, Tommy, he will be making a signature lemon drop from the
vodka.
Spruce Tip vodka. So it's going to be delicious and wonderful. And there they're going to have an array of wonderful seafood and non-seafood appetizers. And from there, then we'll go up to the tram, where as you're exiting the tram, the party still continues. There'll be servers there with your final cocktail, as well as a crab cocktail shooter appetizer. And then you'll just make your way into the dining area where the party's still going. So it is a continuous night of activity, party, and fun.
And again, this is the fundraising portion of the Maritime Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Correct.
Absolutely.
If somebody wants to sign up for Friday night, how do they do that?
They can do that several ways. You can purchase your tickets through the Jack at Hearthside Rainy Day Books. You can also purchase them online at jedc.org/Maritime Festival/Port to Starboard. And if you have any questions at all about how to get tickets, you can always call me at Juneau Food Tours at 907-723-8478, and I'm happy to direct you.
Okay, so people go on Friday, have an amazing time, all these wonderful drinks and food, and then they wake up Saturday morning, and what's in store for them?
Full days of activities. What's before the Maritime Festival and the first year that they're doing this together is actually the Blessing of the Fleet at 10 a.m. at the Fisherman's Memorial. And then 11 a.m. is when the festival starts. And then there they'll be grilling over 300 pounds of rockfish. There'll be, like I mentioned earlier, the Southeast Alaska Sailing Regatta. They'll have a marinade contest, live music by Flustered Cluckers, Jam Kids, Mandolin, so to name a few. Then we have a bunch of kids' activities. We have the Coast Guard search and rescue demo, Taku Tote races, 16B dock tours, fillet contests, touch tanks, a beer garden, so much. And actually also the downtown, in conjunction with the Maritime Festival, the Downtown Business Association will be doing maritime-themed activities and promotions and experiences at participating businesses downtown that are DBA members. Some of them would be Kindred Post, Shoefly, Alaska Robotics, Hearthside Books, Downtown Dames, and many more. You can actually see the full lineup of events or participating businesses at the Choose Juneau Facebook page or the DBA website.
Okay. Sean, you've been to a lot of these. What's a nice way to approach the festival? It sounds like there's a lot going on. Do you bring the family? What do you wear? What time do you get there?
Of
the above.
Absolutely the case. You know, it is an all-day event. I mean, it goes or half a day, like 11 to 5. And there are a lot of things going on. It is definitely family-friendly, so definitely encourage bring the kids and bring the whole family down. It's pretty steady flow throughout the day. So I think it's a really good idea to get there early and get it. We'll have like kind of an agenda so you can figure out what time things are happening. So that way you go down there, you could really see a lot of the booths, you can get a feel for what's going on. And then if there's things that interest you, you could come back at specific times. You could go downtown and enjoy all the different promotions that the DBA is going to be doing during that day. The truth is that it's really meant to bring people into downtown Juneau, celebrate our connection to the water, and downtown as well. So there's going to be things to do both at the festival and outside of the festival, just in the downtown area. I highly recommend the food. The food is always really good, and you can just smell it. And it's rain or shine. So, I mean, like, that's one of the things, too. Like, we've had good years and bad years as far as the weather goes. And true Junoites, no matter what the weather, it hasn't really affected our numbers all that significantly. Like, we've had blowing sideways and rain, and we still get about 1,000 people out there. So dress accordingly. I'll give that as my last piece of advice.
Always dress in layers.
Right? Yeah, right. That's another good advice.
All right. Midgey Moore, Dana Herndon, and Sean Blumenschein. They're the steering and helm TDIC committee behind. On May 7th is the Maritime Festival. The night before is the Port to Starboard dinner. Thank you all for coming on the show. Are we missing anything?
Just get your Port to Starboard tickets at jdc.org/Maritime Festival.
Great. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm a long-lost sinner, dear Lord, you know. I'm out in this world all alone.
Prepare me, oh Lord, to sail on that ship, that ship that's sailing home.
The days are so sad and the nights are so long. They seem like a year to me.
Prepare me, oh Lord, sail on that ship, that ship that's sailing home.
I once had a father, but now I have none. He's gone to his home on high.
Prepare me, oh Lord, to sail on that ship, that ship that's sailing home.
I once had a mother, but now I have none. She's gone to her home on high.
Prepare me, oh Lord, to sail on that ship, that ship that's sailing home.
The days are so sad and the nights are so long. They seem like a year to me.
Prepare me, oh Lord, to sail on that ship, that ship that's sailing home.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m. and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/park/pool. More information at 586-5325.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, April 25th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Eric Scholl. He's the owner of Glacial Grinds. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Nice to have you here, Eric. And so some people have probably seen you downtown.
Yes.
And you have the shave ice stand there. Last year you were by the parking garage. Are you going to be there again this year?
We are actually going to be on 2nd and Main this time, up kind of by the parking structure, by the old Silver Bow.
Okay.
We kind of think that's the best place for locals, so they don't have to go completely into town. It's like right there on the cusp, so it doesn't, they don't have to drive, because I know how some locals don't like to go technically in town with all the tourist traffic and stuff like that. So we're right there. There's a lot of parking in that parking structure. You could even pull up on the side of the street and do a drive-by and grab a shave ice and go on your way. That's a pretty good spot for that kind of kind of action.
That starts up here soon on May 1st.
May 1st is going to be our opening day. Rain or shine, unless it's like really, really gusting and really rainy, then it's a little dangerous for electricity and stuff purposes.
But you do more than the stand. I know you're part of and won Bacon Fest this year.
Yes, we won Bacon Fest. It was a surprise to us. We worked really hard on it. we created a pretty tasty treat. It was called the Maple Bacon Crunch, which we're adding to our menu this year also. What we did was we used real glacier ice from the Taku Glacier. We used our wedding cake flavor, which is like an almond amaretto kind of sweet baked goods taste. We used maple sweet cream and then toffee bits and bacon. And then, we used the glacier ice, and everyone fell in love with it. And, you know, we were pretty excited with, you know, how many votes we were getting. And then at the end of the show or end of the event, they called our name twice, actually. We won first and second place. So we won first for the open division. And then, we won second for the open division, first for the vendor's choice. So it's pretty cool.
Maybe this is a good time. Shave ice is different from ice cream and snow cones, right? Can you tell us how?
Definitely. Snow cones is your typical run-of-the-mill, like, carnival. You know, it's really chunky ice. The flavor doesn't hold to it. It doesn't absorb it. It kind of sinks. It's almost like a drink with, like, little ice cubes, pretty much. Shave ice is very fine, shaven snow, and it absorbs the flavors. And so once you take a bite, you know, all that, those little fine shavings of ice, like, hits your tongue, and it just, your whole tongue gets that whole taste right all at once, and the flavors are really good. You know, they're not super sweet, like typical snow cones. We also have ice cream on the bottom, which makes it unique. That's how they do it in Hawaii. And we have our sweet cream, which we put on top. It's like almost like vanilla ice cream, but like a more of a cream base. And then we do our toppings. We do cool things like bacon. We do pop rocks. We have this one called the Lava Flow, which is pretty cool. We like, it's kind of inspired by the Hawaiian drink, pina colada and strawberry daiquiri mix. So we do pina colada with strawberry, and we do, pop rocks inside of it. And then, so what happens is when we put the pop rocks on, we hand it to the customer, the rocks are exploding, kind of like a volcano. So we got cool little, unique shave ice. We have one called the Root Beer Float Plane, which is a favorite among kids. We give a little toy float plane that comes along with it. And we just have some of the original ones from last year, and we've got some new ones we created. We got the Hula Girl, which is a favorite among people that are from Hawaii or, that lived on the islands. It's lihi moi, which is pickled plum seed that's crushed. It's a very unique kind of flavor. It's traditional in Hawaii, and we got like mango and guava also.
You've mentioned Hawaii several times. What's your connection there?
So the connection is my girlfriend's from Hawaii. She took me there, and we had shave ice, and I kind of jokingly said, let's do this in Alaska with real glacier ice, and we kind of had a laugh about it, and then, you know, the next month, got laid off my job, and I was kind of not doing much, and I was like, you know what, let's just do this, and I was kind of nervous to do it, like, I didn't know how the public would react, and, you know, this guy's selling snow cones, like, they'd think, oh, it's just snow cones on the side of the road, and then, you know, 6 months later, I won Bacon Fest, so I feel like I got taken a little more seriously after winning Bacon Fest and doing all the events and birthday parties we've been doing, and everyone just kind of finally getting the word out. It's just been amazing, and we have such a great response, and we have other things going on also. We are looking to open up a Valley location this summer in June. So definitely look out with that. So we're going to be working with Barefoot Bouncers, which I want to give a shout out to them. They're also my partner. They have all the bounce houses that pretty much go around town for birthday parties. So we're going to be working together to bring together like a park, a little fun center for kids. So it's going to be pretty awesome thing to do in the summertime when kids are out of school.
Okay, because, you were mentioning you do birthday parties and fundraisers. I've seen you at some of those. If somebody wants to get a hold of you for something like that, how do they do that?
Yeah, you could. I think Facebook is generally the best for everybody. You could call. My number is on the Facebook, but if you just type in GLA and then hyphen, it's a hyphen between Glace, Scholl, and then Scholl is my last name, so it's S-C-H-O-L-L. And that's the name of the business. It's kind of mixed in with Glacial. It's kind of a play on words. So it's Glacial Grinds. It should just pop up after you hit GLA. And then just message me from there.
Or find you on May 1st.
Or on the, I know you guys were talking about Maritime Festival. We'll be there. We're going to be at a Baby Mom Expo. We're going to be doing the Carnival Arts thing in UAS. We got all sorts of events planned. So if you see us, come talk to us about maybe doing private parties too. We're always available and willing to work with people with that.
And I suspect you get more business on sunny days, or is that not always true?
It's weird because we just did the color run. I don't know if you heard.
Yeah.
So that was Sunday. It was blowing, gusting, like 15 miles per hour winds, like nasty. And so we had, we had our thing set up for after the race, and we had kids just drenched with water coming up shivering and asking for shave ice and begging their parents for it. So it's unique. It's weird. You know, us Alaskans, if it rained all the time and we didn't do things because of the rain, we would never do anything. So, and that's the plus here. I mean, I feel like down south, if it was raining cold, like people would never do shave ice. But here in Alaska, it's a different kind of entity with what we do. And so, yeah, we definitely get a lot of business still when it rains.
Eric Scholl, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Scott.
This is Amanda Pelori. I host Soundings every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on KRNN. I listen to KRNN because of all the great jazz and blues music and all the great DJ hosts that help put KRNN together. Tune in to KRNN at 102.7.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon today here on Monday, April 25th, 2016. Tomorrow, Ben Brown will be your host on a Juno Afternoon, and on the show will be Hal Geiger to spotlight Thursday's presentation, Return from Grief. We'll talk with Tiana Tozer, this week's Pillars of America speaker. And we'll get an update from the school district, those interviews, Writers Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more live at 3 on KTO News. And online via ktoo.org. Tonight at 7, you can tune into K2 for the story of the Birch Brothers, performed by Mark Whitman. Taking a look at the weather, tomorrow calls for rain, highs around 50, southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. And on Wednesdays, the forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers, highs around 50 degrees.